Rollo May's book, if you get a chance to read The Courage to Create, a very short, beautiful book. A very gifted psychologist talks about scientists who, that it was in the limits that he began to find the creativity. And working within those limits, he found some new strengths and some new insights. But I would basically agree with you. I don't like the limits of money, time, pressures, saying this has got to be done. That's why I read so many stories, story after story, in American Artist and the Artist magazine, where a lot of commercial artists are just leaving the field. They're sick and tired of having by Friday to have 10 drawings in so they can get them through the color press. And there's one after another. Jerry just gave me an article on a young gal who started her own gallery. Where was it at, Jerry?
Portland.
Just that's scary stuff, you know, when you got somebody to support, a family, what have you, and says all of a sudden I'm going to do some things that I paid my dues now. I want to try some different things in my life. Comparison, we talked about that. That's one of the most difficult things. My favorite stories, and I don't know if you've done that, Mike. Was it Joseph in the Technicolor coat? A fun story of Joseph and his 11 brothers. And of course, they all compared themselves to Joseph, and he got the best color and the best coat from dear old dad, and they all ganged up on him out of jealousy and envy. But out of that came a very creative experience. What was once dead came to life. And as he was thrown in the pit, one thing after another happened that he really became a neat kind of person that creatively turned a negative experience into a powerful resurrection. We talked about, what are some other ones? Another thing that often I get into, and I find this sometimes, when people start to criticize me, my first reaction as a human being is to get defensive. And whenever I get in a defensive mode, I'm no longer creative. My arms come in, my neck gets stiff, and I want to challenge you. And yet some of my best art teachers are the ones who have just hammered me left and right. But they weren't talking about my soul and center. They were just talking about technique and stuff that they wanted to challenge in me. And yes, there were times that were saying, that's not the true you, Steve. When is the true you going to come out? And so as I learned to let go of some of that undefensiveness, I begin to understand some things. Would you journey with me for 1 second? This is one of my favorite poems, and it's sort of a fun little poem. See if you get a bang out of it. It's called The Porcupine Debate. Two porcupine friends named Willie and Bill were talking one day of their porcupine ills. Said Willie to Bill with a sorrowful moan, "Isn't it sad we live all alone? The animals shun us. I have not one friend. Please tell me, Bill, what is our sin?" "Don't sweat it, my friend," said Porcupine Bill. "It isn't your sin, it's just your sharp quills. We live all alone, and that's how it goes, because no one wants quills in the end of a nose." "I've got it," said Willie, "the answer I know. I'd rather have friends, so my quills have to go." "But," Billy exclaimed, "it doesn't make any sense. Without your sharp quills, you'll have no defense." Willie thought and thought, and he couldn't decide. Should he give up his quills or save his own hide? Then in a flash, he decided with glee, "I'll put my quills in the trunk of a tree." With all his might, he ran at the trunk, and into the bark went his quills with a thump. His quills all came out in the trunk of the tree, and Willie exclaimed, "At last, I'm free." "Free to be eaten," said Bill in disgust. "You'll find out soon there's no one you can trust." But Willie said firmly, "I must leave my cage. I'd rather risk friendship than die of old age." Far into the night, they debated the matter. Live safely alone or make someone fatter? The porcupine question remains to this day. Is it outreach or safety? Which one do you say? You know, got all these quills sticking outside of us, and anytime anybody gets close to helping our soul grow, we say, stay away from me. You know, you're putting a crimp on my style. One of my favorite quotes from Da Vinci, the great artist, he said, when I want the truth, I go to my enemies. My friends always say, oh, you did such a nice job. That was a fantastic job. But my enemies say, wow, there were some things, you know, and right away I say that's criticism and that's unfair criticism and you shouldn't be doing that, you know. But Da Vinci said, wow, they teach me so much. And if we can learn to realize that that's not a block, but that's a friend to us, we can begin to let some creative things happen to us. Another thing is being able to realize and analyze how the left side of my brain, if I'm in the left or the right, to be able to let the middle of the center of me flow too. I often thought that because I'm in the left side of the brain, that I'm not creative. But I see a lot of creative things being done mathematically, scientifically, with not only a lot of women, but a lot of men who are saying there are ideas, there is creativity that comes out of the left side of the brain too. And so one of the things I'm starting to let go of is trying to be so analytical all the time and what mode am I in. But being able to let that happen and to say, God, you're going to use whatever you want inside of me. Another block that I find and I've been brought up with, I don't know, my heritage is called perfectionism. I get so frustrated because it did not turn out perfectly and because I cannot put this piece in an art show. I'm ready to throw my brushes and the whole canvas right against the wall, you know, because it's not perfectly executed. One of the neat things is to be able to be thorough, but not perfect. To be thorough means we go through all the stages of our life. We begin to understand that. But if it does not happen to our utmost perfection, then being able to let that happen. Christ really taught that to the Pharisees and the Sadducees, didn't he? The most uncreative people were the most religious. And I get scared when I get religious and I'm not spiritual. The most creative people were the ones who weren't worried about the stuff. They were the prostitutes, the tax collectors. They were the losers. They were the failures. They were the ones who said, he didn't paint that right. You know, they were the outcasts. They were the people who had lost it perfection-wise. But that's the freeing thing, to be able to realize that the gospel, the creativity, the newness comes to us. I think the other thing that's really a block to us is abuse. Abuse not only by other people, but abuse by ourselves. We are the most critical of ourselves. Creative people won't start nothing until they have everything perfectly right in a row. But we've also realize that abuse happens not only externally with people in the world with violence, but it happens violently within ourselves. And abuse happens when we get new ideas and we're afraid of sharing ideas. One of the most difficult things is theologians and scientists and artists that come together when we're so selfish and not afraid to share our ideas, is that begins to reflect good things in our life. I mentioned yesterday that Ronald Reagan did something that I don't know if I agree with or disagree with. I think I probably disagree with it more, is if we would call him operating on the left side of his brain, he gathered together a bunch of artists in Florida, and he asked them to dream some dream. And they came up with a program called Star Wars. And he knew that if you get enough people together with ideas collectively, that things begin to happen. And I don't know if it's good. We've got a Star Wars program, outer space. And we're often find times where creative people have gotten together that sometimes political or economic leadership has gotten a hold of those ideas and not used them for the good of the community. So I don't want to judge and say that Reagan was wrong, but he learned something, and he was very intelligent in terms of taking those ideas. The church should be a collective place where all those ideas come together. And one of the most frustrating things of being a pastor is when those ideas die. I constantly get people together, not committees just for planning other things, but ideas. And the most frustrating thing when I left the parish was the people were starting to die with ideas. And maybe that's time to need a new pastor. But what happened is in the Old Testament, as Joel says, without a vision, the people perish. Each and every one of you have got a creative idea about something and some way of how to do it. And if we block that, not only to ourselves, but selfishly through jealousy and envy, create blocks around each other, the Church of Jesus Christ does not flow. And the collectiveness of good ideas do not happen. Joel says young men will have dreams and older men visions, and sons and daughters will prophesy. And out of that comes a beautiful time to be able to let that happen. And boy, when we let all kinds of abuse happen, then we're not a healthy but a dysfunctional family. Another thing that happens, we can talk about is frustration. I sat with so many of the watercolor artists yesterday, and they're just so frustrated. One lady who works in oils, I don't know if she's here today. Sorry. Yep, great. I don't know if I'm going to try that. And I said, come on back, try it again. And one of the fun things about that frustrations is going to learn to take some risks, because when we come back to oil painting, we're going to be a little more free. But Gerhard Frost, that some of you know, retired professor from Luther Northwestern, recently died. He's got tons of books out. Beautiful. He wrote one called Take All the Risks. And this is what I think undoes the frustrations. When I reflect on teaching, he says, I can't forget the words of an Olympic ski champion, a man for whom 2 minutes is a career. Go faster than you think you can in every part of the course and take all the risks. Take all the risks. Great words for one who is to teach. Take the risk of loving, it means being hurt. Take the risk of listening, it means you will learn to have to change. Take the risk of responding, little by little, it will cost you your life. Teaching is a response. Learning occurs within relationships, and relationships involve risk, and the risk of knowing and being known. Beautiful. So one of the ways we counter that frustration is to be able to take all the risks and to let it happen. I've been talking about the negative things of blocks. What's some things that unblock your creativity?
Proper environment.
Proper environment. Okay.
We're at Holden. Holden would be a better environment than that.
Okay.
Right. Information.
You know, I didn't mean to put down Holden and the Transfiguration Mount, and that's great. We do need that, and I do too. That's why I'm here. So we do need a proper environment. I heard that another one.
I said affirmation.
Affirmation. I suppose we can just...
Same thing.
We affirm. We affirm each other's gifts. Isn't that what Paul's saying? We're constantly, if one's a teacher, if one's a prophet, if one is dealing with hospitality, we all uplift those gifts. We don't get jealous and envious over them. We say, oh, I affirm that gift in you. It's beautiful. Yeah.
I think it has, self-affirmation has to come too.
Okay, let's put that. Self.
Courage.
Okay, now we're getting some good ones. I like Rollo May's book, The Courage to Create. And you remember yesterday I talked about a negative experience. In our society, we teach people to be confident. Got the right clothes, got the right smile, got the right words. We're beautiful salespeople. Our TV ads, polished, you say, wow, why can't I be like that? That's creativity. That's not true. It's the courageous people who are willing to do mistakes and take failures and learn from them. I saw a good definition of the word confidence. Confidence is the feeling that you have before you understand the problem. See, a lot of confident people. But where are the courageous people? You're saying, oh, I got some fears, but I'm going to turn those fears into prayers and say, let them thrust. It was just like Dick and Phyllis saying, hey, I'm angry. We're not nonviolent people. All of us deal with anger. But the black civil rights people were the ones who took that anger and harnessed it into energy and kept doing what they believed, their convictions, and not harming another person, but taking that energy. Even when their children were killed and slain and what have you, they took that hate, that anger, and they rechanneled it. We're angry. So the courage is the ability to admit that I'm not perfect, that I'm going to make a mistake, and great, like the scientist, I learn from those mistakes. Yeah.
Well, I love the word encourage because that means to fill someone with courage.
Oh, yeah. Encourage. Yeah, en comes from the Greek word in, courage, yeah. Very good in terms of affirming and self-affirming. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. I think stop and listen to the still small voice sometimes and not to try too hard on your own.
Oh boy. Wasn't that the reading last night?
Yeah.
Or was it the night before?
It was last night.
Elijah. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not in earthquake, wind, or fire. Not. We can't always have the aha experiences.
How about actually achieving something?
Oh, beautiful. To achieve. Uh-huh. Is it E-I or?
I-E.
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 Is it?
Except W-C or...
It's a okay. Where's the creativity?
You can spell it any way you want.
Yeah, creative.
A willingness to risk and to consider off-the-wall ideas in your creativity.
Oh, yeah.
Or like Nike says, just do it.
Risk.
Risk.
Okay, do it. Yeah. Risk it. I was like the skier that goes down the hill. Yeah. That's neat. Let it happen. And that's really hard to do because that means we let go of our controls. One of the most creative steps is the first step in Alcoholics Anonymous. We admitted we were powerless over whatever word you want in there. Alcohol, relationships, and that our life is unmanageable. But because of our pride, or sinful pride, we don't want to admit that. But when we empty ourselves in confession, now we're able, being filled with the Holy Spirit, saying, wow, what do you want to do with me now, Lord? I'm going to yield my spirit to yours. What are you going to say to me today? Not in a controlled environment. Mm-hmm.
How about vision?
Vision. Ooh, yeah, I like that, Connie. Okay, vision. Just right. Each of us are going to have a vision. It might come in an ecstatic dream. It just might become in seeing something. I had a vision one day. I came out of a fast food place, you know, where they sell gas and stuff. And I always buy coffee in a styrofoam cup, okay? And every time I put that critter on my dashboard and I get it on my lap, right? Who's going to redesign the styrofoam cup? Why can't a guy put the big part on the bottom so the weight will be there? But now here's the trick. You help me redesign this. When I presented this idea to a class, a young kid said, but how are you going to stack them then? My idea was to have a portable bottom, which you don't want to come off, which you can take off and then you can still stack them, but you got to put the lid with the small part on top. Because all of you, some of you got...
Huh?
Don't, oh yeah, right, uh-oh. Oh man, I walked into that, didn't I? Oh!
somebody has solved the problem, they've got you a holder to fasten on your dash or on your window already, so you don't have to.
Right, and some of the ceramic cups are the big wide bottoms in the...
Made of nice, clean, recyclable earth.
Yes. And you give all that, what, money to the artists who are doing the ceramic?
So how did you solve it?
Huh?
How'd you solve it?
The only thing I could think of was to take the lid that you use to put on the bottom. Now, you're going to have to make a strong lid that coffee won't come out of. But then it's portable, you can take them all off, just slap them on and fill it up. Still solve the stacking problem.
Where'd you sign the car?
Huh? Yeah. 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 Right. Ah. Oh, Jim. You could have just as you pull up to the gas pumps, you could have coffee stops, and on top, you know, up above your head, you could have this portable container and just the straw that comes down. Right? Huh? Look at that. See, you, as you fill up your car, you can fill up with coffee. Yeah, and then gravity.
Don't drink and drive.
Yeah. Oh, shoot. There's some other ways. One of the things that I'm fascinated with is the communication workshop. And we often don't communicate just through words. Albert Moravian did a study and said we communicate only 7% through words. 35 through the tone of our voice, and 58 through our face. And a lot of people asked when we got Dave and Rach from Vietnam, they couldn't even say hello or goodbye in English. They said, how'd you communicate? I'm fascinated by that. We really communicate with not just words, do we? Mm-hmm. Even in the English language, when I say to you love, how many different definitions are we going to have of that abstract word? It's really abstract. You know, if I was to ask you to paint that, to draw that, put it in poetry, write a song about it, express it through actions, not in a great work of art, but just from a mom to a son or daughter or dad. How do you express that without words? We do it through the tone of our voice, you know, through a groan or a laugh or a cry. And it's fascinating that we end our worship service with a benediction. The more I see that benediction, the more profound that is. And may the face of God be upon you. We know in the Old Testament that you weren't able to see the face of God. Moses was, without dying, you know. But we see the face of God, I believe, in art, music, and drama, but we see the face of God in each other. I don't know if God's going to have black hair, blonde hair. And we talk about male, female, left and right side of the brain. God is all of that. He's our creator. But the face of God be upon you. It's in our face, without words, that I express to you what's going on inside. And to be able to say and let my face be the canvas, the work of art, is one of the most creative ways of being able to say what I really feel about you as a person. And so, long before the words even come out of our mouth, when we're sitting having lunch or supper with people, we're communicating. And all arts are is a form of communication, the nonverbal. I heard the most beautiful soprano, a classical singer, down in 1973 when all the different synods gathered in Minneapolis from around the world, and all the artists and musicians, she got up and with piano sang a song without words. And she expressed herself as being a baby in her mother's womb. And with the tone of her voice and different notes that went up and down, she told us about fear and joy, about pain, about quiet and silence, and went through the whole realm without one word. One of the most beautiful things I've ever heard in a soprano voice. I wish I got a tape of that. So you see, we sure communicate our true self. Creativity, again, is not just painting on a canvas. It's expressing who I am and what's going on with me at this moment. Maybe a past, it may be a future coming event, but what's going on in me now, it's a true reflection of God's face within me and from without. And being able to let that happen. Do it. Risk it. Let it happen. What other kinds of things? We've sort of exhausted them, have we? Had a bunch of them. I did come across this experience of the aha experience. Something's going to happen to us today, and it's going to be a neat experience. And how we record that, we may go home and write about it. We may want to write a song, poem. Want to go home and tell our kids about it, whatever. This is a beautiful author unknown. Through the toilsome world, alas, once only shall I pass. If a kindness I may show, if a good deed I may do, to a suffering fellow man, let me do it while I can. No delay, for it is plain, I shall not pass this way again. So we're going to have some experiences today that are going to be unique. And I believe in a God of surprises. As a young man came in, wanted to commit suicide, he had two young kids. I talked to him about the God of surprise. I said, if you want to do that, you can go ahead, but 5 minutes from now, you're going to miss some things. And I think there's going to be some pretty exciting things that you're going to miss. And in his depression, he looked up at me and he says, yeah, just before I came into your office, my three-year-old jumped up in my lap, hugged me and said, I love you, Dad. And I says, can you imagine that not happening 5 minutes from now? And he said, no. And he says, I guess I'd like to hang around. He's a young man in his late 20s and find out what the rest of life's going to have to say to me. And he had lost his job. He was at the bottom of the pit. And now I think some new creative, neat experiences are going to happen to him. I saw him a while back and he's a changed individual. He's full of light. He's doing creative things that some of us never imagined. He's not playing the piano. He's not writing poems. And he's not painting on a canvas. But boy, he's doing some dynamic things with Domino's Pizza. Domino's Pizza. He's a manager now and he's coming up with new ideas. And fantastic. It's amazing. We let it happen. I don't even know what time it is. It's like that lady with her arm up at 3 o'clock in the morning. I go all day on this. We had fun with this too at the University of North Dakota. I tried to condense all these notes into a short time, but I appreciate your folks' patience. Is it lunchtime?
Just about.
Any other comments that you want to agree or disagree with me in terms of
Can you repeat that quote that you had earlier about risk taking, and you read that quote?
Yeah. And it was about taking all the risks, Dr. Gerhard Frost. Taking all the risks, and what I can do is maybe just give that to you, and if you want to take a look at it. Bless My Growing was one of the first books that he had out, and he's published a number of them, and then as he died, his family put together the last one called The Seasons of Life. Absolutely beautiful. All of his collections his children took. And I would say he's got about 5 books out, and I don't know if the bookstore's got them, but we sure want to get them. They're just short one-page ditties. He may talk about the tree in his backyard. He may talk about the meadowlark. One of my favorites is, I still a song today. He's talking about driving down the country road and a meadowlark jumps up in front of his car and he looks in his rearview mirror and it's tumbling. And he talks about how he stilled a song. He doesn't know where that bird was coming from or where it was going, but he stopped a song. And he talked about that being a teacher in a classroom where a student asked a question and right away he put it down. But he said, today I'm not going to still that meadowlark song. I'm going to let that child, that adult, sing and say what they have to say because there's a song. And that's beautiful. One of my favorite scripture verses is in a hidden book, a book that we don't look at much. It's Zephaniah. If you'd like to look up Zephaniah 3:17, we often talk about our religion as where I pray to God, where I sing to God, where I do all my painting to God. But this is a total reverse, and it's a grace statement. It says in that translated version that God is singing you a song today. And yet, sometimes those deadlines are what are going to push us to be creative. I don't like them. I resent them. I hate them. Use strong vocabulary. But Rollo May's book, if you get a chance to read The Courage to Create, a very short, beautiful book, a very gifted psychologist, talks about scientists too, that it was in the limits that he began to find the creativity. And working within those limits, he found some new strengths and some new insights. But I would basically agree with you. I don't like the limits of money, time, pressures saying this has got to be done. That's why I read so many stories, story after story, in American Artists and the Artist Magazine, where a lot of commercial artists are just leaving the field. They're sick and tired of having by Friday to have 10 drawings in so they can get them through the color press. And there's one after another. Jerry just gave me an article on a young gal who started her own gallery. Where was it at, Jerry?
Portland.
Just that's scary stuff, you know, when you got somebody to support, a family, what have you, and says all of a sudden I'm going to do some things that I paid my dues now. I want to try some different things in my life. Comparison, we talked about that. That's one of the most difficult things. My favorite stories, and I don't know if you've done that, Mike. Was it Joseph in the Technicolor coat? A fun story of Joseph and his 11 brothers. And of course, they all compared themselves to Joseph, and he got the best color and the best coat from dear old dad, and they all ganged up on him out of jealousy and envy. But out of that came a very creative experience. What was once dead came to life. And as he was thrown in the pit, one thing after another happened that he really became a neat kind of person that creatively turned a negative experience into a powerful resurrection. We talked about, what are some other ones? Another thing that often I get into, and I find this sometimes, when people start to criticize me, my first reaction as a human being is to get defensive. And whenever I get in a defensive mode, I'm no longer creative. My arms come in, my neck gets stiff, and I want to challenge you. And yet some of my best art teachers are the ones who have just hammered me left and right. But they weren't talking about my soul and center. They were just talking about technique and stuff that they wanted to challenge in me. And yes, there were times that were saying, that's not the true you, Steve. When is the true you going to come out? And so as I learned to let go of some of that undefensiveness, I begin to understand some things. Would you journey with me for 1 second? This is one of my favorite poems, and it's sort of a fun little poem. See if you get a bang out of it. It's called The Porcupine Debate. Two porcupine friends named Willie and Bill were talking one day of their porcupine ills. Said Willie to Bill with a sorrowful moan, "Isn't it sad we live all alone? The animals shun us. I have not one friend. Please tell me, Bill, what is their sin?" "Don't sweat it, my friend," said Porcupine Bill. "It isn't your sin, it's just your sharp quills. We live all alone, and that's how it goes, because no one wants quills in the end of a nose." "I've got it," said Willie, "the answer I know. I'd rather have friends, so my quills have to go." "But," Bill exclaimed, "it doesn't make any sense. Without your sharp quills, you'll have no defense." Willie thought, and he couldn't decide. Should he give up his quills or save his own hide? Then in a flash, he decided with glee, I'll put my quills in the trunk of a tree. With all his might, he ran at the trunk, and into the bark went his quills with a thump. His quills all came out in the trunk of the tree, and Willie exclaimed, at last, I'm free. Free to be eaten, said Bill in disgust. You'll find out soon there's no one you can trust. But Willie said firmly, I must leave my cage. I'd rather risk friendship than die of old age. Far into the night they debated the matter. Live safely alone or make someone fatter? The porcupine question remains to this day. Is it outreach or safety? Which one do you say? You know, got all these quills sticking outside of us, and anytime anybody gets close to helping our soul grow, we say, stay away from me. You know, you're putting a crimp on my style. One of my favorite quotes from Da Vinci, the great artist, he said, when I want the truth, I go to my enemies. My friends always say, oh, you did such a nice job. That was a fantastic job. But my enemies say, wow, there were some things, you know, and right away I say that's criticism and that's unfair criticism and you shouldn't be doing that, you know. But Da Vinci said, wow, they teach me so much. And if we can learn to realize that that's not a block, but that's a friend to us, we can begin to let some creative things happen to us. Another thing is being able to realize and analyze how the left side of my brain, if I'm in the left or the right, to be able to let the middle of the center of me flow too. I often thought that because I'm in the left side of the brain, that I'm not creative. But I see a lot of creative things being done mathematically, scientifically, with not only a lot of women, but a lot of men who are saying there are ideas, there is creativity that comes out of the left side of the brain too. And so one of the things I'm starting to let go of is trying to be so analytical all the time and what mode am I in. But being able to let that happen and to say, God, you're going to use whatever you want inside of me. Another block that I find and I've been brought up with, I don't know, my heritage is called perfectionism. I get so frustrated because it did not turn out perfectly and because I cannot put this piece in an art show. I'm ready to throw my brushes and the whole canvas right against the wall, you know, because it's not perfectly executed. One of the neat things is to be able to be thorough, but not perfect. To be thorough means we go through all the stages of our life. We begin to understand that. But if it does not happen to our utmost perfection, then being able to let that happen. Christ really taught that to the Pharisees and the Sadducees, didn't he? The most uncreative people were the most religious. And I get scared when I get religious and I'm not spiritual. The most creative people were the ones who weren't worried about the stuff. They were the prostitutes, the tax collectors. They were the losers. They were the failures. They were the ones who said, you didn't paint that right. You know, they were the outcasts. They were the people who had lost it perfection-wise. But that's the freeing thing, to be able to realize that the gospel, the creativity, the newness comes to us. I think the other thing that's really a block to us is abuse. Abuse not only by other people, but abuse by ourselves. We are the most critical of ourselves. Creative people won't start nothing until they have everything perfectly right in a row. But we've also realize that abuse happens not only externally with people in the world, with violence, but it happens violently within ourselves. And abuse happens when we get new ideas and we're afraid of sharing ideas. One of the most difficult things is theologians and scientists and artists that come together. When we're so selfish and not afraid to share our ideas, is that it begins to reflect good things in our life. I mentioned yesterday that Ronald Reagan did something that I don't know if I agree with or disagree with. I think I probably disagree with it more, is if we would call him operating on the left side of his brain, he gathered together a bunch of artists in Florida and he asked them to dream some dream. And they came up with a program called Star Wars. And he knew that if you get enough people together with ideas collectively, that things begin to happen. And I don't know if it's good. We've got a Star Wars program, outer space, and we're often find times where creative people have gotten together that sometimes political or economic leadership has gotten a hold of those ideas and not used them for the good of the community. So I don't want to judge and say that Reagan was wrong, but he learned something and he was very intelligent in terms of taking those ideas. The church should be a collective place where all those ideas come together. And one of the most frustrating things of being a pastor is when those ideas die. I constantly get people together, not committees just for planning other things, but ideas. And the most frustration thing when I left the parish was the people were starting to die with ideas. And maybe that's time to need a new pastor. But what happened is in the Old Testament, as Joel says, without a vision, the people perish. Each and every one of you have got a creative idea about something and some way of how to do it. And if we block that, not only to ourselves, but selfishly through jealousy and envy, create blocks around each other, the Church of Jesus Christ does not flow. And the collectiveness of good ideas do not happen. Joel says young men will have dreams and older men visions, and sons and daughters will prophesy. And out of that comes a beautiful time to be able to let that happen. And boy, when we let all kinds of abuse happen, then we're not a healthy but a dysfunctional family. Another thing that happens, we can talk about is frustration. I sat with so many of the watercolor artists yesterday and they're just so frustrated. One lady works in oils. I don't know if she's here today. Sorry. Yep, great. I don't know if I'm going to try that. And I said, come on back, try it again. And one of the fun things about that frustrations is it's going to learn to take some risks, because when we come back to oil painting, we're going to be a little more free. But Gerhard Frost, that some of you know, retired professor from Luther Northwestern, recently died. He's got tons of books out. Beautiful. He wrote one called Take All the Risks. And this is what I think undoes the frustrations. When I reflect on teaching, he says, I can't forget the words of an Olympic ski champion, a man for whom 2 minutes is a career. Go faster than you think you can on every part of the course and take all the risks. Take all the risks. Great words for one who is to teach. Take the risk of loving, it means being hurt. Take the risk of listening, it means you will learn to have to change. Take the risk of responding, little by little, it will cost you your life. Teaching is a response. Learning occurs within relationships, and relationships involve risk, and the risk of knowing and being known. Beautiful. So one of the ways we counter that frustration is to be able to take all the risks and to let it happen. I've been talking about the negative things of blocks. What's some things that unblock your creativity?
Proper environment.
Proper environment. Okay.
We're at Holden. Holden would be a better environment than that.
Okay.
Right. Information.
You know, I didn't mean to put down Holden and the Transfiguration Mount. And that's great. We do need that, and I do too. That's why I'm here. So we do need a proper environment. I heard that another one.
I said affirmation.
Affirmation. I suppose we can just...
Same thing.
We affirm. We affirm each other's gifts. Isn't that what Paul's saying? we're constantly, if one's a teacher, if one's a prophet, if one is dealing with hospitality, we all uplift those gifts. We don't get jealous and envious over them. We say, "Wow, I affirm that gift in you. It's beautiful." Yeah.
I think it has, self-affirmation has to come too.
Okay, let's put that. Self?
Courage.
Okay, now we're getting some good ones. I like Ronald May's book, The Courage to Create. And you remember yesterday I talked about a negative experience. In our society, we teach people to be confident. Got the right clothes, got the right smile, got the right words. We're beautiful salespeople. Our TV ads, polished. You say, "Wow, why can't I be like that?" That's creativity. That's not true. It's the courageous people who are willing to do mistakes and take failures and learn from them. I saw a good definition of the word confidence. Confidence is the feeling that you have before you understand the problem. See, a lot of confident people. But where are the courageous people? You're saying, "Oh, I got some fears, but I'm going to turn those fears into prayers," and say, "Let them thrust." It was just like Dick and Phyllis saying, "Hey, I'm angry." We're not non-violent people. All of us deal with anger. But the black civil rights people were the ones who took that anger and harnessed it into energy and kept doing what they believed, their convictions. Not harming another person, but taking that energy, even when their children were killed and slain and what have you. They took that hate, that anger, and they rechanneled it. We're angry. So the courage is the ability to admit that I'm not perfect, that I'm going to make a mistake, and great, like the scientist, I learn from those mistakes. Yeah.
Well, I love the word encourage because that means to fill someone with courage.
Oh, yeah. Encourage. Yeah, E-N comes from the Greek word in, courage, yeah. Very good in terms of affirming and self-affirming. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. I think stop and listen to the still small voice sometime and not to try too hard on your own.
Oh boy. Wasn't that the reading last night?
Yeah.
Or was it the night before?
It was last night.
Elijah. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not in earthquake, wind, or fire. Not. We can't always have the aha experiences.
How about actually achieving something?
Oh, beautiful. To achieve. Uh-huh. Is it E-I or?
I-E.
I-E.
I before E.
Is it?
Except after C or it's a
for a, okay. Where's your creativity?
Just tell me what you want.
Yeah, creative.
A willingness to risk and to consider off-the-wall ideas in your creativity.
Oh, yeah.
Or like Nike says, just do it.
Risk.
Risk.
Okay, do it. Yeah. Risk it. That was like the skier that goes down the hill. Yeah. Yeah. That's neat. Let it happen. And that's really hard to do because that means we let go of our controls. One of the most creative steps is the first step in Alcoholics Anonymous. We admitted we were powerless over whatever word you want in there. Alcohol, relationships, and that our life is unmanageable. But because of our pride, or sinful pride, we don't want to admit that. But when we empty ourselves in confession, now we're able being filled with the Holy Spirit, saying, "Wow, what do you want to do with me now, Lord? I'm going to yield my spirit to yours. What are you going to say to me today? Not in a controlled environment." Mm-hmm.
How about vision?
Vision. Ooh, yeah, I like that, Connie. Okay, vision. Just right. Each of us are going to have a vision. It might come in an ecstatic dream. It just might become in seeing something. I had a vision one day. I came out of a fast food place, you know, where they sell gas and stuff. And I always buy coffee in a styrofoam cup, okay? And every time I put that critter on my dashboard and I get it on my lap, right? Who's going to redesign the styrofoam cup? why can't a guy put the big part on the bottom so the weight will be there? But now here's the trick. You help me redesign this. When I presented this idea to a class, a young kid said, but how are you going to stack them then? My idea was to have a portable bottom, which you don't want to come off, which you can take off and then you can still stack them, but you got to put the lid, the small part, on top. Because all of you, some of you got...
Huh?
Don't, oh yeah, right, uh-oh. Oh, man. I walked into that, didn't I? Oh.
Somebody has solved the problem. They've got you a holder to fasten on your dash or on your window already, so you don't have to.
Right, and some of the ceramic cups are the big wide bottoms. Right. Yes. And the
whole made top. Of nice, clean, recyclable earth.
Yes. And you give all that, what, money to the artists who are doing the ceramic?
So
right?
How did you solve it?
Huh?
How'd you solve it?
The only thing I could think of was to take the lid that you use to put on the bottom. Now you're going to have to make a strong lid that coffee won't come out of. But then it's portable. You can take them all off, just slap them on and fill it up. Still solve the stacking problem.
Where'd you sign the car?
Huh?
Where'd you sign the car?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah, oh, Jim. Uh-huh. You could have, just as you pull up to the gas pumps, you could have coffee stops, and on top, you know, up above your head, you could have this portable container and just the straw that comes down. Right? Huh?
Uh-huh.
Look at that. See, you, as you fill up your car, you can fill up with coffee. Yeah, and then gravity.
Don't drink and drive.
Yeah. Oh, shoot. There's some other ways. One of the things that I'm fascinated with is the communication workshop. And we often don't communicate just through words. Albert Moravian did a study and said we communicate only 7% through words. Mm-hmm. 35% through the tone of our voice and 58% through our face. And a lot of people asked when we got Dave and Rach from Vietnam, they couldn't even say hello or goodbye in English. They said, how'd you communicate? I'm fascinated by that. We really communicate with not just words, do we? Mm-hmm. Even in the English language, when I say to you love, how many different definitions are we going to have of that abstract word? It's really abstract. You know, if I was to ask you to paint that, to draw that, put it in poetry, write a song, but express it through actions, not in a great work of art, but just from a mom to a son or daughter or a dad. How do you express that without words? We do it through the tone of our voice, you know, through a groan or a laugh or a cry. And it's fascinating that we end our worship service with a benediction. The more I see that benediction, the more profound that is. And may the face of God be upon you. We know in the Old Testament that you weren't able to see the face of God. Moses was, without dying, you know. But we see the face of God, I believe, in art, music, and drama, but we see the face of God in each other. I don't know if God's going to have black hair, blonde hair. And we talk about male, female, left and right side of the brain. God is all of that. He's our creator. But the face of God be upon you. It's in our face, without words, that I express to you what's going on inside. And to be able to say and let my face be the canvas, the work of art, is one of the most creative ways of being able to say what I really feel about you as a person. And so long before the words even come out of our mouth, when we're sitting having lunch or supper with people, we're communicating. And all arts are is a form of communication, the nonverbal. I heard the most beautiful soprano, classical singer, down in 1973, when all the different synods gathered in Minneapolis from around the world, and all the artists and musicians, she got up and with piano sang a song without words. And she expressed herself as being a baby in her mother's womb. And with the tone of her voice and different notes that went up and down, she told us about fear and joy, about pain, about quiet and silence, and went through the whole realm without one word. One of the most beautiful things I've ever heard in a soprano voice. I wish I got a tape of that. So you see, we sure communicate our true self. Creativity, again, is not just painting on a canvas. It's expressing who I am and what's going on with me at this moment. Maybe a past, it may be a future coming event, but what's going on in me now, it's a true reflection of God's face within me and from without. And being able to let that happen. Do it. Risk it. Let it happen. What other kinds of things? We've sort of exhausted them, have we? Had a bunch of them. I did come across this experience of the aha experience. Something's going to happen to us today, and it's going to be a neat experience. And how we record that, we may go home and write about it. We may want to write a song, poem. Want to go home and tell our kids about it, whatever. This is a beautiful author unknown. Through the toilsome world, alas, once only shall I pass. If a kindness I may show, if a good deed I may do to a suffering fellow man, let me do it while I can. No delay, for it is plain, I shall not pass this way again. So we're going to have some experiences today that are going to be unique. And I believe in a God of surprises. As a young man came in, wanted to commit suicide, he had two young kids. I talked to him about the God of surprise. And I said, if you want to do that, you can go ahead. But 5 minutes from now, you're going to miss some things. And I think there's going to be some pretty exciting things that you're going to miss. And in his depression, he looked up at me and he says, yeah, just before I came into your office, my three-year-old jumped up in my lap, hugged me and said, I love you, Dad. And I says, can you imagine that not happening 5 minutes from now? And he said, no. And he says, I guess I'd like to hang around. He's a young man in his late 20s. And find out what the rest of life's going to have to say to me. And he had lost his job. He was at the bottom of the pit. And now I think some new creative, neat experiences are going to happen to him. I saw him a while back, and he's a changed individual. He's full of light. He's doing creative things that some of us never imagined. He's not playing the piano, he's not writing poems, he's not painting on a canvas, but boy, he's doing some dynamic things with Domino's Pizza. Domino's Pizza. He's a manager now and he's coming up with new ideas, and fantastic. It's amazing. We let it happen. I don't even know what time it is. It's like that lady with her arm up at 3 o'clock in the morning. I go all day on this. We had fun with this too at the University of North Dakota. I tried to condense all these notes into a short time, but appreciate your folks' patience. Is it lunchtime?
Just about. Yeah, just about.
Any other comments that you want to agree or disagree with me in terms of...
Can you repeat that quote that you had earlier about risk-taking, and you read that quote?
Yeah. And it was about taking all the risks, Dr. Gerhard Frost, taking all the risks, and what I can do is maybe just give that to you, if you want to take a look at. Okay. Bless My Growing was one of the first books that he had out, and he's published a number of them. And then as he died, his family put together the last one called The Seasons of Life. Absolutely beautiful. All of his collections his children took. And I would say he's got about 5 books out. And I don't know if the bookstore's got them, but we sure want to get them. They're just short one-page ditties. He may talk about the tree in his backyard. He may talk about the Meadowlark. One of my favorites is, "I Still a Song Today." He's talking about driving down the country road, and a meadowlark jumps up in front of his car, and he looks in his rearview mirror, and it's tumbling. And he talks about how he stilled a song. He doesn't know where that bird was coming from or where it was going, but he stopped a song. And he talked about that being a teacher in a classroom where a student asked a question and right away he put it down. But he said, "Today I'm not going to still that meadowlark song. I'm going to let that child, that adult, sing and say what they have to say, because there's a song." And that's beautiful. One of my favorite scripture verses is in a hidden book, a book that we don't look at much. It's Zephaniah. If you'd like to look up Zephaniah 3:17, we often talk about our religion as where I pray to God, where I sing to God, where I do all my painting to God. But this is a total reverse, and it's a grace statement. It says in that translated version that God is singing you a song today.